Welcome to the Culture and Coins podcast, your destination for entertaining economics. I'm your host, Emily Dela Cruz.
And I'm your host, George Action Pong, where we cover all things music, fashion, entertainment, politics, sports, and tech for the culture.
What are we talking about today? Is this week three of Corona quarantine?
Week three of 20, because you already know it just got extended. So we're inside until April 30th now.
Which will keep getting extended if your cousins don't stay their ass in the house.
They refuse. Atlanta, the Kroger parking lot looks like the let out of the club. So I have no hope.
I don't know what else people need to see to get it. But hey, here we are. What are we diving in on today? I feel like there's a lot we can talk about. What are we talking about today?
So I just, you know, was it 4 million people were unemployed last week? We see that we can guess that if this continues, the numbers for unemployment can go up to, I think I read like 40 million, which is nuts. But yeah, I think everybody's really concerned about their personal finances. People are concerned about, you know, still getting in this investing game. So this episode, we're really going to take a deeper dive into personal finance building blocks and really like what you should be doing as an individual to, you know, get through not only these tough times, but, you know, any tough times in the future. So we're going to be diving into a couple of different things just to help our listeners really be able to take action during this time and not just kind of sit back and observe what's going on. So the first thing that I want to kind of get your opinion on is, you know, Dave Ramsey's baby steps. So a lot of people, if you don't know, Dave Ramsey is like the personal finance guru of all of the land. He has published, you know, a ton of books. He has like a radio show, I believe. He has like a Academy, like, I mean, a million different things. He's a founder of like Financial Peace. So his message over, you know, a ton of decades has always been preaching what he calls baby steps, right? And in the baby steps, it's different things that you should be doing to secure your financial freedom, if you will. So I want to know, because I have my personal thoughts, but I want to know what your thoughts are, George, on, you know, Dave Ramsey and like his baby steps from like the, you know, financial aspect of it all. And then just like as a general millennial of color.
Yeah. And I still do want to know your thoughts. But so I think Dave has a philosophy where he tries to save you from yourself, right? He tries to give you this blueprint that's like this dummy proof, in his opinion, that just prevents you. Like, he's free with any type of debt, no credit cards, save $1,000 and then pay off all your debt before you even think about investing. And okay, cool, great. He's helped a lot of people pay off a lot of debt, and I'm happy about that. I do feel like his perspective is a little short-sighted and it doesn't apply to everyone, but I can't understand why he took that approach. So here's what I don't agree with about his perspective. Number one, if I'm so aggressively paying off all my debt, right? But let's just say young Rona came along and my job was like, you're furloughed or we don't need you. And all I got is $1,000 in the bank because I'm so aggressive on all my debt payoff. I can't call up American Express and say, yo, I'm gonna send y'all like an extra $1,000 a month. Or I can't call up you know, any of my other debtors and ask for the extra money that I use to aggressively accelerate my debt payoff. And so I just think that this should be a more balanced approach to personal finance, right? Like, yes, you should be mindful of your debt. Yes, you should be paying it off in a smart way, but you still need to prioritize savings because you just don't know what could happen, right? Speaking from personal experience, you know, at 28 years old, I was the healthiest person I knew at the time and had a fluke health situation that happened to me, right? Where I was, you know, when I was an entrepreneur, so thank God I practiced what I preach, and I couldn't actively go out and build my business for several months. And if I had listened to Dave Ramsey, I would have been screwed. So I think it's not well-rounded. I'm glad people paid off a lot of debt listening to Dave's approach, but I think whether you listen to Dave or you listen to somebody who wants you to be over-leveraged, the problem with both of those approaches is they're extreme, right? So, and when times are really good for both of those advice folks, yes, paying off debt, and you have a good job and you can go out and get another job or get a raise and there's no fear of being laid off. Yeah, Dave's strategy might work. When the economy's going really well and it's easy to borrow money and everybody wants to rent out Airbnbs, great. The extremist person who's over leveraged, his philosophy works. So the reality is in good times, almost anybody's plan can work. But what happens when shit hits the fan? And I think that's when there needs to be a more well-rounded approach. It's like, yes, I'm glad I was being smart about paying off my debt, but I'm also smart that I was building up my emergency savings well beyond $1,000.
I agree, because first of all, the whole save $1,000, like this alleged stimulus is $1,200 and people don't know what they're about to do with that, right? So it's like the whole save $1,000, I know from Dave's perspective, is like, you know, you build this initial emergency fund, you pay off debt, then you build, you know, your real emergency fund and like all of this stuff. But it's like, yeah, like me having a paid off home right now, it would be of literally no value if I don't have any cash reserves, right? So I totally agree. And I also think that we need to take into consideration like where a lot of people who follow Dave Ramsey's baby steps live, right? Where they live, what their family dynamic is like, you know, because I follow a lot of Dave Ramsey's like pages and programs and things like that. And like the people who are paying off debt are usually like married, in the military, live in the middle of suburbia, you know, where like their house is 150 and, you know, they have a $50,000 job or whatever. And not discrediting the work that people do, obviously, to get in better financial situations. But I think for an urban millennial with atrocious student loan debt, super high cost of living, it's just, you know, not realistic to follow those baby steps. And I really think that it's time for somebody else to come out with something that makes sense for people like you and me, you know? So I think that's kind of like where you and I come in, and where, you know, Black Upstart and Black Wall Street and like all of these, you know, accounts that are showing up, all of these content platforms to really just be able to give a different perspective. Like, you know, if I'm a 20 something, 30 something year old that lives in New York, Chicago, LA, DC, like I can't be living Dave Ramsey's baby steps, so $1,000 is not going to do nothing for me, you know?
100%. Yeah, it's just being well rounded. Like, I think people, when they try to give out advice, they like to be extremists so that like they can stand out. It's like, this is my methodology. But like at the end of the day, like, you know, you need to give people well-rounded advice that can be, that can actually, it might be a little less attractive or a little less exciting because you're not going to have your big, I paid off all my debt sign super early. But like my sister's a prime example of that. Like she went to law school, has a great paying job. She makes multi six figures and she's my client as well. And she was like, if I would have been listening, because originally before I became an advisor, you know, who doesn't know about Dave Ramsey? So she's looking around and seeing what she should do. And she's like, if I didn't listen to you and instead listen to Dave Ramsey, I would be in a world of hurt right now, because she's been able to build up. Now her investments have surpassed her student loan debt, right? So now she has options to be paid off. But what if she waited to pay off her student loan debt and she didn't take advantage of compound interest, right? Because your biggest advantage when it comes to investing is time. You know what I'm saying? And if I'm giving y'all the realty, you know, before I had my own firm and I was working with another company, and a lot of the wealthy Caucasian counterparts, as I like to call them, that I used to work with, they said, look, man, I'm gonna tell you the truth. Like, my kids don't care about debt. Quite frankly, I don't care about debt that much, because at the end of the day, I want to prioritize my time building wealth, because I know my life insurance is okay off my debt. And then so. It's like, so why would I waste all of this hard-earned time that I spent on this earth making money, prioritizing to paying off debt, when I can just know that my life insurance is going to take care of it, right? And not to say that you don't pay attention to high interest debt. Obviously, cash flow is a big thing. I'm a big flow of the cash flow method, like looking at your debt. And I feel like that's my personal methodology, like looking at your debt and understanding what debt will free up the most cash flow, right?
Right. So, yeah.
Credit card, even if credit card's high interest, minimum payment right now is $100. If I'm going to be aggressive about anything, maybe I get this car paid off, it's going to free up $500 a month. Right? That's my approach. Like, I mean, yes, interest is important. Yes, snowball method is cool to be able to like have that reward feeling, but I want to create more cash flow because that's going to give me more options in the long.
So. Yeah, I totally agree. I actually had posted on my Instagram that I was consolidating my credit card debt. And I didn't end up actually consolidating it with like a loan, but I ended up just asking for a credit limit increase on one of my cards. And then I balance transferred my other two cards to that card, right? So I went from having, I believe it was like $417 across, you know, all three cards in credit card payments to now paying like $225 on that one card. So that freed up some cash flow. I mean, I still have the same amount of debt, but now if I decide to still keep paying that $417 towards that one card, I'm paying off my debt faster, right? So just using small little tricks and loopholes and things like that to, you know, again, because it, at the end of the day, it's a cash flow game. It's not how much debt do I have, you know, how much mortgage do I have, whatever. It's like, how much cash do I have to live my life? And if this debt is not allowing me to live my life, then I need to take care of it type of thing, right? So I know a lot of people are super like hyper like aware of investing right now, and like they want to get in the market. And you know, I'm one of those people that right now I try to look at my investment account just like a fast growing savings account, right? So I use Robinhood. I know you probably gonna yell at me because real investors don't use Robinhood. They on E-Trade, they on Ameritrade, they on TD, they on whoever's platform. But you know what? I'm riding out with the Millennial app right now. But you know, I've been thinking about, you know, how can I reallocate my portfolio? Like, what am I gonna do? You know, do I want to? Because at the end of the day, what I like about having my money in stocks, right, is that at any point in time, I can sell them off and I can have access to the money. It's not as liquid as a savings account or as liquid as a checking account, obviously, but, you know, I can get it within a few days versus aggressively investing into my IRA or into my 401k. I'm going to get penalized for taking that money out before being 59 and a half. So I like to just look at my investments as, like I said, a savings account that I have that I just don't have access to, but if shit gets crazy, you know, I can access a couple thousand dollars out of there by selling the stocks that I have. So for those people who want to get started with investing, what would you recommend during this time when, you know, it's a good opportunity to get in the market? You know, people might be wondering, like, am I supposed to hold these stocks after all of this is over? Am I just day trading? Am I getting in and out? Am I doing options? Like, there's just so much information on the internet that I think a lot of people are overwhelmed. People are very interested. So what do you recommend in terms of like getting started with the fundamentals of investing?
Yeah, great. I mean, it's been a huge buzzword and question for the last month, really. And my perspective is like, unless you are planning to invest for income and basically become a professional trader, you really should not worry too much about individual stocks, right? Could you buy some really great companies that have taken a hit in the last several weeks right now? For sure. But my advice to everybody, until they get to a portfolio size, really, honestly, of like closer to like 200,000, like you shouldn't be prioritizing individual stocks. And I recommend that you focus on ETFs, which are exchange traded funds. And the reason being, the analogy that I always like to give is, Emily, so you live in Atlanta. Let's say you go to Lenox Mall and Adidas, just for whatever reason, they decide to close their store in Lenox Mall. Is Lenox Mall going to close, do you think?
No. Lenox Mall is still going to be there and people still going to be getting shot up at it too.
Hundreds of stores, right? In Lenox Mall. But Lenox Mall isn't going anywhere. But if that same Adidas was a standalone store outside the mall or in a strip mall or somewhere, and that Adidas store goes down, then, you know, that whoever owned that store loses everything. So I prefer to own the mall versus owning the individual store. And that is the best analogy that I like to give when it comes to investing in ETFs, right? So you might really like Apple. You might really like Google. You might really like Amazon. And the reality is you might be priced out of really having any meaningful amount of shares in those companies anyway. So how do you still invest in the technology sector without only owning those individual companies? You invest in a basket of funds, right? They're in the technology sector. And so that's what ETFs gives you the power to do. Not to mention, it lowers your risk. Because yes, there's more upside by investing in an individual company that has the potential to go up. But as we saw these past few weeks, they have the potential to go down dramatically, right? So I actually own, a lot of people are interested in airline stocks because they're taking a hit right now. Yes, again, you know how to trade, you can do that. But why try to learn an entire new skill when you can still facilitate a similar outcome by owning an ETF? There's an ETF called JETS that basically mirrors the airline industry, right? So instead of trying to figure out, should I buy Spirit or should I buy American, should I buy Delta or should I buy whoever, buy the ETF, right? And so that's my fundamental approach to investing. As a matter of fact, a lot of the clients who invest with our firm, because we know that, you know, we want to have people being well diversified, we have, you know, ETF model portfolios, right? And while they don't seem as attractive, I have so many clients throughout the year sometimes like, hey, I heard about this hot stuff. And then right now, my clients are the ones who are, a lot of them aren't the ones who are calling me panicking because it's like, oh, I checked my account and not so bad, right? Because they're diversified. We didn't get so attracted to, you know, the big next hot stock, the next Amazon. And I'll leave you with this last stat on this topic is 76% of all the companies that are in the S&P 500 today were not there 30 years ago, right? And an S&P 500 is a mirror of the 500 top companies across multiple sectors in the world, right? And so the fact that 76% of the companies that are in it today weren't there yesterday is because companies that are popular today, that are doing well today, might not always do well tomorrow. If I'd have told you 10 years ago that BlackBerry would not be a thing, you look at me like I was crazy. If I would have told you that Radio Shack would not be a thing, you look at me like I was crazy. You know, and I could go down a list of 100 of these, right? These are individual companies that in their prime, Nokia, in their prime were, you know, great, but they got phased out, right? And so to mitigate some of that risk versus having a crystal ball and knowing which company is ultimately not going to be that company tomorrow is to invest in ETFs. Because what the ETF is going to do is when a company is not performing, it's going to swap it out and replace it with a new one after time, after, you know, over time. The same way the S&P 500 does. You don't get to stay there forever, right? If you're not performing, you no longer a part of that index. So if you own an index that mirrors the S&P 500, then you don't have to play the guessing game about what stock is best. And it sounds really good to make those predictions, but most people are wrong. Most predictions just confirm your own bias. If you're wrong, you have an excuse. If you're right, you never bought enough for it to matter. So, you know, and that's just the reality. And that's coming from somebody who doesn't.
So you recommend, so I hear invest in ETFs if you are, instead of individual stocks. So do you recommend now, okay, let's say Corona hit, I'm investing, I'm buying all these, you know, funds at 50% off or whatever, you know, what on sale, as we like to call it, then what do I do after the crisis is over, right? Because for me, for example, I'll give you a perfect example of why I don't day trade stocks is because I'd be too attached, right? So I got Chipotle when it was $250. And I tell this story all the time because Chipotle is like literally my success story stock. So I bought Chipotle. Well, I read a book, first of all, where it said one of the big investors, what he used to do was he used to look at what his daughters were buying and he would invest in like whatever his daughters were buying because he knew like that was going to be a trend, you know, for his daughter's age group, right? So I was like, okay, well, what are the things that I use all the time that I believe in that I know is going to work, right? So Disney, because they own literally so much media, right? ESPN's owned by Disney. Like I can go down the list. I invested in Chipotle because I was literally eating Chipotle. I live in the Bronx and I would take a 40-minute train ride to get Chipotle when I was 17 years old. Like I was committed. Right. I invested obviously in Apple because I had an iPhone. I invested in Microsoft at the time because I had a Microsoft tablet. So I just like invested in things that I was using because I believed in it. Right. And then I forgot about it. And I just like went about my life and like, you know, was in college doing my thing. And then I looked up one day and Chipotle was like $900. And I was like, oh, it's picking up. But then I was like, okay, so now I'm like between this rock and this hard place, because it's like, okay, should I mean, I'm not really married to Chipotle, right? Like, I believe it's a good company or whatever. I don't know if the whole fast casual thing is going to be a trend forever and ever, but I'm between a rock and a hard place of, okay, once all of this blows over, do I want to sell off all of my like individual stocks and get into ETF? Do I want to like keep some forever and ever and then like cash out of them and like use the money? Like, I'm just in a place where I don't even know what I want to do with them. Yeah. I do have like a little bit of an emotional attachment to them. And we all know that when you're investing, emotions needs to be the last thing that you ever have on the list. So for people who do, you know, decide to purchase during this time, like, what exactly should be their game plan? Is it, hey, hold it? Is it cash out and then transfer that money to your IRA when this blows over? Right. What do you recommend?
Yeah. So for me, I like to look at the portfolio in six categories, right? You have blue chip stocks, which are companies like Coca-Cola, like your premier companies that you're not going to see a ton of growth, but they're super steady. Disney is an example of a blue chip stock, right? You have dividend paying stocks, right? Stocks that, you know, you're mainly owning, and it could be blue chip, but you're primarily owning them because of their dividend. Then you have defensive stocks, right? Stocks that tend to do well in times like this, right? They're not necessarily affected or impacted by the economy. Then you have growth stocks, right? Those are the companies that, you know, like Chipotle, when you bought, it's like, okay, it has the potential to grow exponentially. Like, a lot of tech companies tend to fall into the growth stock sector. And then you have cyclical, right? You have stocks that, you know, when the economy takes its cycle, right, it performs well at the peak, it doesn't perform so well at the trough, right? So they're not performing well right now. And then you have penny stocks, right, which I don't really include or advocate for inside my portfolio. But just want to educate you guys of the different things you can invest in. So I look at the first five from a building a portfolio standpoint. So what I would do, I would look at the stuff that I bought, right? Maybe I'm holding it for a little while because I got it on sale and things rebounding. Great, made a great decision. And airlines have gotten back to their position, and the other companies that I bought have gotten back to kind of their original seller trading levels. Great. Now, what I would do is I would go back and look at those categories and see, where do those stocks fall? Are they cyclical? Are they blue chip? Are they defensive, et cetera? From there, I would then ask myself, well, how much of my portfolio do the current stocks that I own make up, right? Because if you just look at the first five categories I gave, that's what, 1% a category, right? And if I just started buying stocks and I bought 100 shares of Delta, right, and then I have like some other random shares of maybe a defense company or defense stock, now, even though I own those companies, I'm out of balance. I don't have a balanced portfolio. So my question would be, or my thought would be, keep a percentage. If you want to keep a percentage, keep a percentage that makes sense relative to all of the stocks that you should be owning to have a balanced portfolio if you own individual stocks. The beautiful thing about ETFs is you can own an ETF that could basically take advantage of that entire category so that you know your balance versus wondering, okay, do I have enough defensive stocks? Okay, how many companies fall into this bucket? What are those companies? You have to do a lot more research and guessing to figure that out. But if you absolutely just want to hold those, I would recommend owning ETFs that fall into each one of those categories. And then from there, seeing how much of your individual stocks you can still own and still have a balanced portfolio. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. That's a great approach to it, because as you know, time goes on and stuff like that, again, you have to kind of be a little bit more savvy with individual stocks, because yeah, they start to wall out, and then you know, next thing you know, you're losing money. So I had one perfect example is when the whole cannabis conversation started up, right? Like, everybody was like, buy cannabis stock, buy cannabis is the future. Right, and we did, and then it was like, it ain't do nothing.
Yeah, I say it's far away. I knew, I like, there's no regulation yet at scale. Everybody was telling me I should talk about it. I'm like, no, I shouldn't.
It didn't do a thing, right? So it was like, you know, it was a waste of money. Not a waste of money. I mean, it was a learning lesson, as I like to say. But you know, it didn't perform like people thought that it was going to perform. And you know, it's a perfect example of not being aware of the market and then making mistakes with money that you could have used for something else, right?
Yeah. So
I love that idea of, you know, once this is all over, being able to really look at how, you know, you've allocated everything in your portfolio and then really starting to balance it out. I also know that, you know, you need to think about how old you are, right? Because how I'm going to reallocate my portfolio as a 29-year-old with no kids and no husband. I mean, my mortgage payment isn't crazy. Like I don't plan on dying anytime soon. Right. Is very different from somebody who's 49 or 59 and reallocating. Right. Especially I know during these times, a lot of people who are feeling it the most are people like my mom and stuff like that, who's like, oh my God, you know, I had X amount in my 401k and now like half of it has been wiped out. Like what the hell am I going to do if I plan to, you know, retire in 3 years and the market doesn't bounce back, you know? So that's also something to consider. What happened?
Mom wants to retire in 3 years.
My mom wanted to retire 10 years ago. Okay. She thought that the moment that I became an entrepreneur, that I was going to like put her up or whatever. I do want to retire her like in the next 5 years for sure. But as far as like her job, she's trying to retire, yeah, within the next 3 to 5 years.
Pretty good. I'm just asking because if she's like supposed to retire next 3 to 5 years, how was her 401k allocated to where she lost so much in a short time?
Yeah, I don't know, but I'll ask her.
Okay.
I'll ask her. We'll have that conversation offline. Give her some free financial advice, George. Get her together. But you know, my mom's a social worker, right? She came to this country when she was 18. Well, I mean, she came from Puerto Rico, so technically it's the same country, but that's a whole conversation for another day. But, you know, she came to New York when she was 18. She started college, didn't speak the language, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm absolutely positive that whatever my mom did with her 401k was not the savviest thing in the world, because she's not a financial person. She's a social worker, right? She solves problems for a living, for others. So, you know, I'm absolutely positive that, you know, nobody, like for me, when I had started my first job after college, like nobody sat me down and was like, here's how your 401k works, and here's how an IRA works, and here's how this works. You know, we kind of just put money into these things and we just trust that they're going to do what they're supposed to do without a real understanding what's going on behind the scenes. And then when it's time for us to cash out, we're wondering why there's not more money in there, or, you know, why we can't retire as soon as we wanted to, or, you know, why people retire with millions and I'm retiring with 200K, you know?
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And then real quick, I do want to talk about just like how to get started in with investing, like for beginners. Because, you know, we've had the conversation of like, is it Robinhood? Is it Ameritrade? Is it this? Yeah. Is it that? And one thing that I did love about what you did over at Capital Wise was, you know, the Black Wealth Friday movement and helping people take 10% of what they would have normally spent on Black Friday and use that money to get started investing. So if you guys head over to capitalwise.co, and we'll put the link also in the show notes as well. George has this amazing like 4-step video process to teach you like how to open a brokerage account, you know, how to fund it. And then there are also some hand-picked, hand-selected stocks or ETFs. What's in the portfolio, G?
Both stocks.
So George took time out of his day to put it together, to do some of the hard work for us. And you can, you know, just get started investing in something that a professional has developed for you. Because if you don't know, your 401k and your IRA and all that, whether it's a robo investor or it's an actual person, there is somebody with more knowledge than us that has sat down and looked and said, okay, based on the goals of this particular group of people, of this person, you know, I'm going to build their portfolio, or I'm going to allocate their portfolio like this, right? And they do the hard work of researching the stocks. They do the hard work of researching the ETFs. They do the hard work of figuring out where your money should go so that all you have to do is deposit and then they take care of the rest, right? That's how I like to invest. That's how I like to make money. I like everything that I do to be passive, and I don't necessarily want to overwhelm myself trying to become the expert in every single area of life. And finance.
It'll sound good and it'll look good to, you know, again, I don't know if we talk about it on the record or off the record, but like when you pick the hot stock or you make a recommendation of what to do, you never end up buying enough to for it to really matter, right? For you to be able to say, I told you so. And then when you get it wrong, you just have an excuse. So just, you know, it's not going to be as sexy or as attractive to, you know, buy ETFs. But I promise you, it's a lot safer. It's a lot easier.
Right.
And we would love to help you. And it's super simple. So yeah, head over to Capitalize. We'll get you squared away.
Oh, and let's note this, because, you know, the kids be like, well, my uncle, you know, shared a post from Black Upstart on how to, sis, let me tell you another thing. So when you are a professional licensed financial advisor, right, like George has a legal duty to do right by us, right? So George can't just be like, oh, you know, my homeboy is an executive over at company X, so I'm going to put his stock in the portfolio because that's my man's, you know, like he has, was it a fiduciary duty to us to do right by us. So you also want to be very mindful of who you're taking financial information from, because again, because of the internet, anybody can jump online and say anything and be an expert and brand themselves in any specific way if they know what they're doing, right? So it's important for you to do your due diligence and get the right advice from the right people who are doing the right things.
Yeah, she's right, because the realty is some of your favorite experts have reached out to me for the past 3 weeks asking if I want to do joint lives about certain content, because, you know, I love them, but when times are tough and people have to start making real decisions, they have to come to an expert and they can't give out, they shouldn't be giving out fluff advice, right? And so, you know, I pride myself on holding myself to that fiduciary standard, because again, like, my information is public record. You can go to the SEC website right now, see if I've ever had any issues, any complaints as an advisor over the past 10 years. Clients can request the balance sheet of my company at any given time, so they can feel confident that, you know, I'm not trying to dip into their account because my company is insolvent. There's a lot of measures in place. And again, that's not to toot my own horn, that's to protect you, right? Because we've seen stories of the Bernie Madoffs and of the world and people who, you know, aren't doing things the right way. That's why the SEC has to put these provisions in place. Because if you just take random advice from random people, number one, they don't have a responsibility to be accurate. And then number two, if you don't check the rap sheet of the person that you are trusting, they're not a fiduciary, don't be surprised if they run off on the club, right? Okay. So, you know, you have to be careful. These are your life savings. This is a big deal, right? And how you decide to approach it, whether you learn the skill yourself and you manage it yourself and you feel very confident about it, or you trust someone else to do it for you, or trust someone to be the guiding light. They might not be doing it for you, but trust them to be the guiding light. You need to know, like, just don't take a screenshot off IG because they have 100,000 followers, right? What is their portfolio looking like? What gives them the right to advise them, right? And to be honest, outside of these past 3 weeks, you don't even see me talk about investing that much, quite frankly, unless you are a client, because for that very reason, because it might not be applicable to you. And I would hate for you to take something offline and then it didn't work for you, or was a outside of your risk tolerance, and now you're trying to come for me, right? I'm about to actually come, you know, I'm about to chill out again. Like, I did it just because I got asked so much, but I'm about to chill out again and talk about investing at scale, just because, like, it's really simple, you know, hire the professionals, right? You know what I'm saying? That's not me tooting my own horn, just like hire someone who has made it their life's work to get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can say I started studying for my test, for my licensing, and I was like, this is literally the hardest test of life. First of all, it's boring as hell. And second of all, why is it 3 hours? I can't. So let me tell you, those people who are licensed, keep them lifted in prayer, because they're a different type of species all together. Which, now that we're actually talking about, you know, being over leveraged and just like doing shenanigans because you're following information on the internet, I am heartbroken that my uncle, Grant Cardone, is out here in some mess on the internet. So allegedly, because we don't have any proof, but allegedly, Grant Cardone, who is a super successful marketer, author, real estate investor, financial money guru, he wrote a lot of, you know, my favorite books, so Sell or Be Sold To, and things like that. He has a fund Yep, exactly. He's an amazing marketer. What else he's doing, I don't know. But he has a fund called Cardone Capital, where he takes money from accredited and non-accredited investors to invest into real estate, to basically allow a group of people to pull their money together to invest in an apartment community, apartment complexes, and things like that through his Cardone Capital fund. Right. So what I read online was, and again, this is alleged information because we don't know if it's true or not. He laid off 80%, no, excuse me, not 80%, 80 employees, which is about 50% of his staff last week. So that leads me to question the credibility of everything that that man has going on, right? Because this is somebody who literally has built a whole platform telling people, don't buy your primary residences. Purchasing a home to live in is the dumbest idea that you ever have. Investing in individual stocks is for dumbasses. Like, you know, he had a very polarizing position to obviously support and build a foundation for having people want to invest, you know, in apartment complexes because they pay out month over month or whatever. But, you know, it just goes to show, like, when you're over leveraged, whether that's you're over leveraged because you have entirely too much staff, right? And you can't run your company as lean as possible, when you're over leveraged in your portfolio, when you're over leveraged, you know, in just your life and your accounts and in, you know, the debt that you owe versus the income that you're bringing in. Like, you can over leverage yourself in every single aspect, right? And if there's anything to learn from scenarios like this, is like, we need to stop over leveraging ourselves, right? And I don't think people realize that they over leverage until it's too late.
Until it's too late. 100%. Yeah, I saw the news about Young Grant, and it was disheartening. We all love, you know, Grant and his what's the word I'm looking for? Just his style. He's, you know, it's hard not to love the guy, or you either love or hate him depending upon who you are. But I think you brought up a very good point: is the polarizing piece, right? Because it goes back to Dave Ramsey. Whenever someone has a polarizing viewpoint, it, 9 times out of 10, it's to support the underlying methodology that they preach, right? No matter what end of it, because Grant Cardone and Dave are at opposite ends of the spectrum, but they both have polarizing. Like, they will talk shit about you if you have debt. You're stupid. Like, you know, Dave, this country, so.
Yeah.
Like, the concept. Like, I'm saying a little bit of what Grant believes is accurate. You should invest in real estate conceptually. I believe that not having a lot of debt is right, but it's nuanced, right? And it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. But to get back to the point of stop over-leveraging yourself, you know, everybody will shame the person who, you know, is in their late 20s and has a roommate because they're not married yet. Everyone will shame the person who's driving the paid-off car. And it's like, oh, you said you're supposed to be out here getting it, but you ain't got no, you know, Rolls Royce or drop top. Everybody will shame those people. But who's laughing now? Who's laughing now? The first of the month comes and they're not worried about a car payment, or they have one, but it's super cheap. Who's laughing now at the person who owns the home? And granted, you know, and the mortgage is a fixed rate, or they have the ability to be able to defer if they need to for 60 days because they own the home, right? You don't have that same luxury when you rent. So who's laughing now, right? And it's just like, it's not a one size fits all. I mean, yes, should you invest in real estate? But yes, but not to the point where it's beyond your capacity, right? Could you maybe use some debt, but it still shouldn't be outside of what you can manage and control if there were to be a situation where the tenants moved out, right? You know, and so you just have to be very mindful about the approach to investing, because when things are good, it's easy to just do everything that LLC Twitter tells you to do, or Grant Cardone tells you to do, get the Airbnbs that you don't own, or no money down. All these ideas that people tout. And then I literally, within 2 weeks of the crisis, people are trying to figure out how they're going to, like, unravel these situations that they've gotten themselves in. You know, it goes back to the beginning of the podcast. The fundamentals always hold true. It never makes sense to carry an unnecessary amount of debt. It never makes sense to not have cash reserves and listen to Grant Cardone and invest every penny that you have, you know, when, let's be honest, we know Grant has cash reserves. He's telling you that so you can invest.
My man has a jet.
Right. he has cash reserves, right? Dave Ramsey tells you not to buy permanent life insurance, and him and Susie Omen both own permanent life insurance, right? They're trying to tell you messages that help their narrative. You know what I'm saying? Like, anything that I've advocated for ever, because I'm a fiduciary, I have to document it. When I place a trade, I have to document it. Am I recommending these same things for my clients? Like, anything that you hear me say, I've done before I've ever said it. You know, I'm not saying it just to, like, sound good or have, like, a polarizing message that on the internet so that I can stand out amongst the marketplace. And so, like, over-leveraging yourself is just bad news, because right now those people are really stressed. People have the really big fancy houses that look good on Instagram, and the really fancy cars, and shame the people who live below their means. Now they're the most stressed, depending upon their financial situation and if their job or business is impacted by this coronavirus.
Listen, I wish that my mom lived in Georgia, because guess what? I would be living in her house. Okay. Period. But yeah, no, I totally agree with, you know, it's just like the shady always fall. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been very, and Lord forgive me, but I've just been very, very entertained seeing the people who have spent months or years on the internet talking shit to people, right? Get into Airbnbs, get into this, buy this, do that, right? And now they're the ones that are literally shitting themselves because they don't know what they're gonna do with their 62 cars that they put on Turo, and their 48 Airbnbs that they rented out in Atlanta, and their 700, you know, stocks that they can't offload now because they took a hit, right? Like, it's just, again, when you do too much of anything, you're bound to put yourself into an uncomfortable predicament, an uncomfortable situation. And we just need to learn to stop over leveraging ourselves. So if you guys take anything away from, you know, this episode, is hire the professionals to help you do the things that you actually want to do. And professionals, like people who are licensed and experienced in the thing, right? Just because somebody, we need to get out of this monkey see, monkey do era that we live in of, oh, well, because so-and-so bought 4 properties and is cash flowing and she has a 297 course, I'm going to go learn from Susie because Susie did it, right? Just because Susie did it doesn't mean that she is a professional in her field.
Right. And you don't know Susie's backstory. A lot of people are selling smoke and mirrors, right? Some people have might have significant others who aren't, like, really on social media like that, funding their ability to do this stuff, right? They're telling you they got it out the mud, right? Some people come for money, right? Like, you just don't know people's backstory. It's called personal finance for a reason. It's personal.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, you gotta really look at your situation. And so, to your point, Em, I had this tweet that I was gonna share on Instagram, and I was like, I don't know if I would share it right now, but, like, people are, I don't know if people will think about it, but it said, so a lot of talk has been made around financial literacy and why it's important to save for emergencies. I'm more interested in seeing all the entrepreneurs who were stunting and flexing on everyone, telling you why you should be like them, but they didn't really have it like that, right? And so I'm just very, I need to get my heart right, but I'm just like, I'm very fascinated by, like, this concept, because they need to be exposed so people can realize, like, oh, wait, I wasn't behind. I shouldn't have rushed my process. It was okay for me to just do things the normal way, instead of looking at people posting these videos with the rented jets that they maybe didn't even rent. Maybe they just walked up to and telling me that I need to have 20 Airbnb properties, right? Like, trust your journey. Stop having fear of missing out. Stop thinking that people got it when they don't. Most people are trying to figure it out. So stop trying to be like them, you know? Like, everybody's trying to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? And for those who are true experts, you know, at this point, ask for receipts. Because some of the experts are, you know, I don't mind. I don't really have too many clients, but sometimes they do. And they'll ask about what's in my portfolio. They'll ask about who I've helped in the past. And I have no problem sharing that stuff. And anybody that you work with, whether they're a real estate investing coach or whether they're whoever, like, okay, you show me all these properties, you show me all the stuff you did, but how much, like, what do you actually have now? Like, do you have anything to show for? Because it's not about how much you make, it's about how much you keep, you know? And some people have their behind the scenes life is in shambles, but they're putting themselves out there as an expert. And there's nothing wrong with your life being in shambles if you're not putting yourself out there and tapping together, right? Make no mistake about it. I'm not saying that you should be, everybody should be perfect, but don't put yourself out to be perfect and have it all together and selling other people's dreams. And then they're trying to aspire to that and you don't even have it together.
Right. I agree. And on that note, we just gonna keep pushing, keep folks lifted.
Yep.
Because it's about to get really real in these streets. But we hope that this episode was super helpful for you guys, that you got the fundamentals of investing and just like the basics of what to do in a time like this. Definitely make sure you guys check out the show notes and the descriptions if you're watching this on YouTube to be able to get, you know, all the links to get started investing with Capital Wise for any other resources that we've provided throughout the show. All of that will always be listed in the show notes. And if you want to send us a message, you can also do that. That will also be linked down in the show notes as well. And we look forward to talking to y'all next week.
Awesome. Until next time, guys.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Culture and Coins with me and Emily, where every week we bring you your source for entertaining economics for the culture. Tap in.